The method.
Ideas. Method became
unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
Without doubt. Do you call it unsound method?
I don't see any method at all.
Hello and welcome to Unsigned Methods with me, Lachlan Bloom.
And me, Jamie Batchin. For those of you listening for the first time, this is a podcast where we speak to other writers of literary fiction about their craft, approach and technique.
And if you are tuning in for the first time, we hope you like the podcast and do like and subscribe wherever you find your podcast. We've been recording now for nearly 5 years, so we've got quite a back catalogue of episodes to go back and pick from.
There's over 50 episodes to go back and have a listen to.
And this month, we're speaking to Jenny Landreth. Jenny's the author of several works of non-fiction and also a script editor for TV series, including the children's classic Hey Ducky. I think she said they're on their sixth series already. So she's
fifth, something like that. Which I think is a show that we are both aware of due to being at a specific point in our lives and having had children of a certain age.
I think we've both watched quite a few hundred hours of Ducky by now, probably.
I think each of our daughters could probably give quite an expert analysis of the show by now. So it's a brilliant show, and I think we liked that we had the opportunity to speak to Jenny about how a show like that is put together, and she spoke about in general how you would approach a show of that ilk.
Yeah, I think it's got its own unique sort of feel, Ducky, and it kind of obviously aimed at preschool children, but a lot of the elements of craft and putting together a narrative are similar to other forms of fiction. We talk later on about her current project, which is The Magic Roundabout, a sort of reboot of the classic children's show. There's a lot of parallels there in the psychedelic elements of both shows.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting to see a show that's really got a head of steam going, and they're working on multiple series of, and to speak to her about a show in its infancy just being put together.
And without any further ado, we give you Jenny Landreth.
From my own personal point of view, I'm coming at this from quite a position of ignorance about how a show is written, script edited, how many people work on things, how it all works.
I'm happy to fill you in with our particular process, and I think it is quite a particular process.
I guess, would you be able to give us just a little bit of background about your sort of route with writing up to this point and how you got into it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, obviously, I'm quite an old person, so I've had quite a varied creative career, but I've always worked within the creative industries. I have what I've always called a patchwork CV, but apparently it's better to call it a portfolio CV. And it means that I've worked in all kinds of different roles, but in various of the creative industries around performance, theatre. I started off as a press and PR person. I've worked in publishing, and then I moved into telly. But as a comedy researcher at the time when comedy was billed, I kid you not, as the new rock and roll, and everybody was very excited. It was all very big. So I worked in those kind of arenas for a very long time, always working with writers as a kind of enabler, helping people getting their work better, helping them get their work produced, script editing, advising, consulting in all sorts of different ways. And it didn't really occur to me. I knew there was something not quite happening for me, but in terms of personal creative fulfillment, but I wasn't quite sure what it was, what was missing. And then I started to write just a few little bits and bobs. And it seemed to me at the time that the way the writing options that were available was you write a play or you write a novel. So I wrote a play and then I wrote a novel, but it felt like I was masking, that I wasn't really doing what I wanted to do. It didn't feel like something that quite fit my skills or that quite fit my voice or whatever. And then actually I'd done a few bits of writing for animation, a few bits of episodic writing because I did some BBC used to have an animation unit and I did some script consulting for them. and ended up script editing a few things and writing some interstitials for them. And then on the back of that, worked with one of their writers on some radio thing, and started to I wouldn't have put on my passport writer at that point, but definitely started to feel that it was something I was interested in doing, but I just didn't know how or what to do. So I started actually, and it's funny because we're talking right at the time when Twitter seems to be in a bit of a meltdown. I started to do a blog because that was something that was available for everybody. You didn't have to have nailed your color to a mast. You didn't have to say, this is my big work. It was just something you could have fun with. You could test out writing. You could become a writer, but in a more public forum. So I started to write a blog and I really loved it. That kind of gave me loads of confidence to start calling myself a writer and go into the long form narrative nonfiction that I write. And at the same time, the stuff that I'd done on a smaller scale for other writers in animation as a development producer and script editor and writer helped me to pitch myself more confidently in that sphere too. So it all kind of coalesced, but quite late on in, you know, what for you guys is the dim and distant hills in the future, you know. So I faffed around a huge amount before I got to that point. But it kind of all knits together, you know. It's like animation. You don't see the full thing until you step back and it's produced if you're working on one little inch. And my career's been a bit like that. When you step back and look at it, you go, oh yeah, that kind of all makes sense. It just took a long time to create this thing that has now become my career.
I mean, I guess those sort of causal links that led you to this point, they only make sense in retrospect. And I think that's possibly quite a common experience with people who are involved in anything creative, maybe, but particularly writing seems to be like that, just sort of, yeah, chipping away at lots of different things until.
Yeah. But also I've been extremely lucky and extremely kind of hampered at the same time. I've been extremely lucky that I've only ever really worked on things that I absolutely wanted to work on. But also, you know, when I had kids, I stopped work for a really long time, which is something I absolutely would not recommend to anybody now. But again, extremely lucky because I was young and experimental in a time when I was explaining the enterprise allowance scheme to somebody the other day, and, you know, times when we could get housing benefit and earn cash in hand, you know, where we were times were much freer to be more experimental and creative than they are now when, you know, rents take up just a phenomenal percentage of people's wages. So, you know, it's a kind of mix of luck and waiting and patience and, yeah, a bit more luck.
Well, I guess we're unfortunately talking in a week where it seems like Arts Council England is drastically looking at cutting what little bits of funding do exist for people to get on in things. So it's an ever more challenging environment.
But yeah. Well, also a year, you know, because lots of the kind of creative work I've been involved in theatres and that has, or the stuff I've been most interested in has always been fringy. You know, it's never been Arts Council funded or mostly not Arts Council funded. It's always been the little organic shows that happen in little theatres and that people are doing on their own on a shoestring. So in that sense, that stuff will always go on. And in times of stress and hardship, you know, creative artists have to strive harder to get their work out there, but it still does go on. So I don't know that that's going to change the kind of work that I most enjoy going to see. But, you know, for instance, this Edinburgh that's just gone, you know, so many artists, the cry of Edinburgh has always been it's an absolute hellhole for people unless they're, you know, at a certain level at their performance or funded, or, you know, and the little artists who go there lose thousands of pounds. So it's not an experimental place for the arts anymore, which is a real shame. And when I started to go there many decades ago, it was much more experimental than, you know, you could lose a couple of hundred quid, not thousands and thousands, which you can lose now. So yeah, things have definitely changed.
Yeah, I guess it has a bit of a chilling effect on the amount of people and the amount of different approaches that can get exposure, though. But I don't want to sound too pessimistic about it, but yeah, you sort of worry about how broad the marketplace is, as it were.
I think there's loads of reasons to be pessimistic under this government with, you know, the cuts that they are making. This is levelling down, you know, without a doubt, the institutions that they're that they're not funding anymore. To think that you don't fund a national theatre is just extraordinary. It's just extraordinary, you know, and that is not necessarily a lab for new and untested writers or performers or directors. But it's, you know, the notion that it should exist on its own without funding is absolutely mind-boggling to me.
They'll make all the claims about soft power and that's what we've still got in the world and things like that. So with the script editing, that's sort of something that I'm vaguely aware of what it entails, but what was your sort of route into that, if you feel that you became a writer a bit later or really called yourself a writer later on?
The thing is, there probably are, but I didn't go to one. There's no script editing school as such. But I just started, started from the ground developing little shows with people, little theatre shows, wrote a couple of my own little theatre shows, constantly around writers and artists, and just basically with an understanding of how scripts should be put together, started to help people make their work better and just continued doing that on and on. And gradually, just kind of gradually carved out a niche. One of the first things I did, I was for a while, when it was a huge production company, I worked for Spitting Image as their head of development, but they wanted to do more live action comedy as aside from the puppet show. And so I developed with a writer, Sarah Ann Kennedy, a show called Crapston Villas, which became Channel 4's first animated sitcom. And because Sarah and I had worked really closely together, we understood each other. I think I knew how to get the best out of her, and we complemented each other really well. So I became the script editor on that. And from there, it just kind of took off. I didn't specialize in kids at that point. In fact, I didn't really work in kids until I started work on Hey Dougie. But that's from Crapston Villas, that was my first screen credit as a script editor.
And did that feel quite different from the blog you started, the writing that you were doing there? Was the script editing and that side of things sort of distinct in your head from the blog writing?
Yeah.
Did they then sort of merge quite naturally, or was there a sort of aha moment when you realized, oh, this writing that I'm doing on the blog could relate to the script editing that I'm doing over here?
I don't see them as merged at all. I see them as two very separate things in a way. There's kind of work, which is Dougie and other show, telework that I do, and then there's writing, which is my own narrative nonfiction. I've written four books I don't see those two things as merged at all. I see them as kind of running on parallel tracks, because there's no way that Dougie influences what I do or what I do influences Dougie. So I see them as kind of separate skills. Although I do think, having been an editor or being an editor, you do look at your own work in a different light, perhaps.
Is there any sort of crossover in terms of, I mean, obviously quite different topics and forms, and the plot arcs or the narrative structure of Dougie is naturally going to be quite different from, well, just about anything else.
Well, except even in a 7-minute episode, you still do need, I mean, you know, obviously it's all massively truncated, but you still do need those story arcs. So in that sense, everything is the same. You know, in terms of character development and narrative spines and arcs and all of that, those things do, obviously.
But on a day-to-day basis, you're not sort of pulling inspiration from a piece of non-fiction that you've written and thought, something I did there could be useful in a future episode of Dougie.
No, definitely not. And actually, I think the two things being separate is a really great thing, partly because I have a bit of a... I have a brain that kind of needs lots of different things happening all the time. It's really lovely having, you know, if I've spent 3 days writing a piece of my own work, it's lovely to go and play with preschool animation. It's just a complete delight. And the reverse, when you've spent, 3 days wrestling with a knotty problem with a Hey Dougie storyline, it's absolute joy to go back and be expansive and, you know, take an idea and write 1,000 words about it rather than trying to compress something into three, you know. So they coexist really happily in that regard. Each one is it sets off a is really nicely set in relief to the other.
So you work on them all sort of concurrently. You don't have sort of months where you'll just spend time writing your own nonfiction, and then there'll be times when you're doing this sort of script editing of the shows. They kind of, you'll have a few days on one, a few days on the other in general.
In general, because that's freelance life, isn't it? Feast or famine. So I'm currently in famine, which means I'm doing neither thing. I've got a book pitch out with my agent who's sending it to editors, and Dougie is in hiatus. So, you know, currently I'm doing neither of those things and finding it really weird. It's like, oh, well, what do you do if you're not working? I'm not very good at that. So they probably will both happen at the same time, and I'll be back to going, oh, I've got too much work, woe is me. But actually it's great.
And do you find when you come out of famine mode, is the impetus for new ideas, do you find that you draw from different sort of pools between the two? Could you be walking down the street and equally likely to have an idea for the next episode of Hey Dougie as for a piece of nonfiction? Or are there different ways in which the sort of creative ideas come to you?
I think there's definitely different ways, partly because I've got a little bit of experience of publishing. I know that for a narrative nonfiction idea to work, it cannot be an idea that you've had as you walk down the street. It's got to, because you've got it, that's got to be something you're going to care about for the next 2-3 years of your life. So, but at the same time, I do often go, I must remember, you know, little things I see, conversations I overhear, a memory will pop into my mind and I'll have to quickly scribble it. But definitely walking down the street, I'll see a kid doing something really daft, or, you know, just remember something. Actually, it's mostly seeing kids in the park doing really daft things, or hearing parents shout at their kids or something. You think, oh, actually, we must do a Dougie ep on how it feels when your parents shout at you, or, you know, or something, something like that.
So I think maybe it's sort of an interesting point to go from that, from the idea then, the sort of genesis of it, how the broad outline of how an episode of Hey Doug, is that's nice and sort of self-contained, it's 7 minutes, from kind of the very beginning, like how does the idea start, and then how do those stages come together?
Mostly it's me and the director, Grant Orchard, who will start the process off. He will have kept, and I will have kept separately, a kind of rolling list of things that either we want to or we should cover, or he's had suggested or I've had suggested, little things that might be good badge ideas. And that might be a word like optimism. Let's say it's the optimism badge. Let's say one of us has discovered that word, and or a kid has asked us what it means. So we'll have this list, and we'll go, actually, yeah, that has legs though. Or more often it's no, cross, you know, especially we've done nearly 200 eps. But say we go, yeah, okay, let's do something around the optimism badge. So we'll just literally have that as a starting point. And usually I will go away and write a 3 or 4 line synopsis. Grant will then completely turn it around and say, no, we're going to do it this way. But we'll have something that the BBC will clear, and they will say, be careful of this or that or the other. So then, you know, either way, first bit of the process is the BBC will clear this 3 or 4 line synopsis around optimism. And then we kind of decide who is either our most optimistic writer or our least optimistic writer, if we're feeling contrary. And they will start the outline process, which I think for us is a really painful process. I don't know. I don't work on other kids' shows, so I don't know how painful their outline process is. But we can often go 10 rounds of an outline. I mean, that's our kind of more extreme end of it. But it'll start off on a 1 page, and then it'll extend to 2, then it'll gradually, you know, they can become longer than the script. They will have all the moods and feelings and thoughts, and we will toss that around. The writer will throw it to me. I'll make notes and send it to Grant. Grant will make notes. I will then collate those notes and send them back to the writer. You know, so it goes on like that for, well, that can actually take months, usually, because Grant is also running a huge team producing X amount of other episodes. So isn't just on the scripts in the same way that I am. Eventually we get an outline that we agree on. And as I say, it can be really complicated. It can have much more thought and feeling in it than we will end up with our script. Partly because that's a really useful thing for the writers to know. You know, if all the if all the squirrels are feeling really dejected at one point, that's a use. You might never say you all look dejected, but it just might be a tiny little note for either a piece of music that goes with it or something.
So for the outline, how detailed is that? Would that give really specific things about which squirrels might take the lead more in this and, you know, what the weather's like and all that? Yeah, is it really everything, even though it's called a sort of outline?
It is everything. But for me, it's a kind of, it's not exactly a point of principle, but it's something I really cherish, is the opportunity to turn these outlines into really interesting reading documents at the same time. So it's not like reading a beat. I really want to be able to follow the narrative journey really, really clearly all the way through it. So I want them to be funny to read and lively to read, partly because, you know, there's execs who have to read this shit and it's got to come to life. So I kind of pride myself on turning them into really very readable, enjoyable outlines that will say a butterfly flutters by or a leaf drops, or it's, yes, you'll know what the weather's like. You'll know what somebody's wearing if it's relevant. You'll certainly know what squirrel is speaking. You'll know whether they're inside, outside, which bit. You'll know everything from this outline. So actually, then when you come to writing the script, you can almost cut and paste, you know, into your final draft document. It's pretty easy.
And are there lots of scripts going on at the same time? Are you simultaneously working on 20 different badge ideas?
I'm normally juggling between 8 and 12 at various different stages, yeah.
Is there much crossover between sort of backstories between the different episodes, that something's happening in this, like, oh, the squirrels are feeling dejected, and that's going to tie in to another episode that we're working on?
The only thing we have to do in that sense is which becomes more and more complicated as things have gone on, is say, oh, we can't do that because we've done that before, or we can't, you know. So that's our problem there. We never back refer, like, oh, you already know how to whistle because we've done the whistling badge. We never, unless it's a fictional badge. So we never cross refer. We will try and always be juggling a kind of roster on very straightforward stories. We've had some massively complicated plotty ones. We went through a little phase of having really very plotty ones that, you know, were as complicated as, we had an Ocean's 11 pastiche, which got really very complicated. Yeah, stuff like that. And then other times it'll just be a really simple little through line that feel, you kind of, you know, you think, oh, I've got to rely on this being enough, having worked on these really unwieldy ones where you're trying to cram a 2-hour plot into 7 minutes for the under fours. Yeah, we're always trying to juggle a roster of different kinds, and obviously different writers bring different sensibilities and particular skills.
How many writers do you have on the, and is it, are they sort of all freelancer brought in, or do you have a sort of core team of writers?
I'm a bit sad about this. I think we're a pretty unsociable lot because I work from home. Everybody else in the Dougie team tends to work at the studio, but I work from home because my writers are all over the country. There's a couple I've never met, which I suppose is more normal now than it ever used to be. But we don't, we have a kind of core team in that there's a few people that we know are really, really reliable, that we know understand the show really well. But I'm always trying to bring in new people. It's just, I would hate to have to switch the whole team from old to new in one fell swoop, because actually it is quite hard work. But because we've got such a body of, you know, stuff to kind of inculcate that into a new writer.
Does each writer work on one episode on their own, or is it kind of split with all the writers working on each episode, or
each writer has one episode? They might be running two or three at a different time. Like one might be, you know, at beat stage, which is the first round of outline, and another might be in second draft of script, because we never go beyond two drafts of script because we've done so much work in outline. So once you get to script, you're on the home stretch, which is great. Each writer works on one or two ideas, and if there's a new writer, obviously we'll just give them one to start off with and, yeah, see how they go. It's quite a hard ask for a new writer, saying, can you now fit into this show that's been running for a really long time with its really particular way of writing. You know, you will never a couple of new writers. So when you were going to speak on the phone, it's like, wow, we're not going to speak on the phone. I'm going to email you. You can speak on the phone if you must, but couldn't we just email this between us? You know, so yeah, it's getting to grips with my funny ways, Grant's funny ways.
I mean, do people threaten to walk out because they've been trying for so long to? Well, I suppose once you get to the script, it's different. But with the sort of outline that you're doing, have you ever just abandoned them because you think, oh, we've tried so many different ways to sort of do this and it's just not working? Or do you, once you've decided that that's the badge you're going to go for, you find a way of making it
No,
work?
We do abandon some of them. Our hit rate is pretty good, you know, in terms of from commission to, we might abandon two or three in the course of a series. But mostly that's because some things are either really good or an idea we feel we should do, you know. And we just haven't, and we've gone down a particular road over and over again trying to get this idea to work. And it just will feel too didactic, too educational, or just, you know, not quite. Because, you know, it's got to be a story that there was a recycling badge. We really felt we should do a recycling badge. But actually doing that in a way that's not just like, hey, kids, you should recycle is quite dull. So we tried that one a few times. And the writer was, of course, all our writers are amazing, coming up time and again with, how about this? How about that? How about that? But it just wasn't quite hitting home. So we just went, yeah, let's call it a day on that one. But mostly we do see them through. Yeah.
What are you doing?
Oh, off, off.
You have to deliver a parcel. Where to, Dougie?
Oh, off, off.
At the end of that blue road.
That's not a road tag. That's a river.
And I thought, my God, the genius of that. The genius. Will to do that.
Do you go through many stages when, before getting to the outline, when you're kind of working out what the badge should be? Like you mentioned optimism or recycling. Do you sort of reach for the thesaurus and finding different variations of, should it be optimism? Should it be positivity badge? Should it be something else? Or do you kind of put the name down as the sort of title, and then through the outline process you're changing it?
The title does often change as we go along, partly because the story we want actually has moved away from the badge, and it's much easier to change a badge title.
Yeah, you don't feel stuck to, well, we said we're doing optimism, so we're going to stick with optimism.
No, if it suddenly goes like, actually this would be much better as pessimism, let's do it as, you know, let's call it that instead. Yeah, no, we change those bits. And in terms of coming, I mean, quite often we'll get back, we'll kind of instinctively know, either Grant will or I'll feel really strongly that we should be doing something, so we'll write a synopsis. But that actually, it's only just me making it up. So quite often we'll get down route one of the synopsis and then just go, oh, do you know, this idea really isn't working. Can we completely? So it's more likely that the episode will bear no relation to the original synopsis, because it's just been an idea that I've gone, okay, optimism, somebody's feeling down, glass half full, you know, I'll have just come up with something to get the idea onto the slate. But it's very often doesn't quite work out once you start to tell, find a story that fits it, so we change it.
There's something that we should have probably talked about before looking at a specific episode, but I think go to this and then we can go on to the script. You mentioned when we were chatting by email, is it the series Bible, the something Bible? We assume, and this is just from my sort of inferring from the name, it sets out the rules, what the characters are, and all the sort of background information that's got to be for the continuity of it.
Yeah, that will be, I mean, in theory, that is something that, for instance, the Dougie Bible came about way before the show did. It'll detail, it's all about values, tone, main characters, aim of the show, audience. It'll kind of really be specific, additional characters, all of that kind of thing. So yeah, it can start off as a kind of selling tool so that a broadcaster can see what it is, what you're, you know, what's going to differentiate you from Paw Patrol or what Pepper or whatever. But then in terms of as we go along, ideally the Bible should be added to and amended with all our additional characters and, you know, tweaked so that the character bios might be more up to date. Or although I've never done that with Dougie, maybe somebody else has taken that role on, but I certainly haven't. I suspect it would be a bit of a kind of, you know, tome now. We've had so many additional characters, but that I think it would be a bit of a doorstopper now. But that's something I do for other shows. Other series is right there, you know. Show I'm just working now on a show that's just looking to reboot, and I'm doing their Bible. So that's all about, and because that's a reboot show, that's about taking the characters that work and bringing them up to date and adding new characters, and again, values of the show, what the tone of the show will be. Will we use humor or
is this the magic
roundabout? Yeah,
which has got a distance, I guess, between when it was first on and what they're now, maybe. So
more than several generations. I mean, I've obviously gone and looked back at the original iterations of it, which I do remember from when I was small. I remember them being on just before the news, and that's something that's been reincarnated across the times. There was a horrible period in the, I think it's in either the early 2000s or the 90s, a kind of very garish CGI version of it all, where I was kind of watching it thinking, what the hell is going on here, and who is this supposed to be for? And so I'm trying to turn it into much more kind of low-key, charming, all the things that we used to love about it, the kind of theatricality of the sets, the lovely, warm, lovable characters, you know, very the surreal and abstract.
I might be getting this wrong, but I think I read somewhere that I'd seen it as a kid and assumed it was a sort of British production, and that it was all voiced in English, and I'd assumed it was either BBC or some British production. But then recently I read it, I think it was a French production, and that all the voiceover was pretty different. The original producer or director was quite unhappy with the sort of the humor that was introduced in the voiceover in the English version, because it didn't really relate to how it was in French in the original. So I gather this new production will be entirely a kind of British, or maybe not British, but it's all being produced at the same time. There's not a separate sort of voiceover going on to.
No, I'm definitely writing in English. Otherwise, these would be very short episodes. But it was all written and produced in France, and it will again be produced in France because it's a French company that have the rights. And actually, it's been kind of thrilling because everything I've done for it has to then be passed over to the widow of the original creator, who has to decree whether or not she approves of the new stuff. And that's kind of daunting and rather wonderful to have that link right back to the original, you know, somebody going, yeah, that works, that doesn't work. It feels rather wonderful. But this is definitely not, and actually the whole thing was narrated last time, you know, in the original it was all narration, no character voices. So this time the characters will speak. They have spoken before, but this time they will definitely speak, and there will also be a narration. So you know, we're kind of moving on in ways that might feel quite subtle, but that hopefully really work to make something that feels, you know, it's got to feel contemporary, but at the same time acknowledge the charmingness is pretty timeless, I think.
And I guess it will be drawing on the sort of English version quite heavily. I mean, you presumably seen the English version a lot and taken a lot more from that than the original French. I don't know if the original French is still available anywhere.
Well, I've certainly, I mean, it would be zero point me watching an original French because I would have no idea what the characters were supposed to be doing. But is it drawing? I suppose it's, I mean, there's certain stereotypes around the characters that I think are more the stereotypes have arisen more than is true to the characters, if that makes sense. You know, when you watch, you think, oh, okay, we've laden this with a lot more than is actually there. So I'm not I don't think I'm drawing on anything as so much as kind of hopefully recreating a sense of charm. But you can't look at a kind of vaguely hippie-ish rabbit the way the design is without remembering those tones of Dylan, you know, constantly strumming his guitar and being really stoned. So yeah, it's where, yeah, keeping some of that and losing some of the stuff that is very definitely unhelpful. There was a couple of old men characters in the original, which now feels like, oh, what are you guys doing hanging around? You know, we really don't need you. You can bugger off.
Working on that, and when the Bible was produced for Dougie, is there, because they're children's shows, is there a kind of explicit acknowledgement that it has to be, to some extent, educational? Like, there has to be a certain percentage of it that is useful to children rather than just being stories?
I think, I know we've kind of come across that with, or that's been important to the French producers for Magic Roundabout, that there is an educational element without it being, you know, doing your sums or whatever. And I think that obviously the BBC remit, part of the BBC remit is to be educational. But obviously in kids shows, because particularly with Dougie, it's a preschool show. So the stuff that we are teaching has really very little to do with education and stuff, and much more about just being a human being, which is the widest possible interpretation of educational that you can get. It's like how to get on with other people and how to recover from a sad thing, or how to share a happy thing, or, you know, just really in its widest form, rather than that element like today we are going to learn X, Y, or Z.
And is a sort of lack of cynicism or kind of sarcasm or anything like that, is that just from, because Dougie seems to be quite, I don't know if earnest is exactly the word, but there's no sort of like sideways like winks or nudges or anything for the adults, which you do see in some kids.
Yeah, no, that's really deliberate. And I think we very, very occasionally he will do a look to camera. But it's much more about an exasperation rather than a cynicism. And very occasionally the narrator will sound like, you're slightly leading the adult audience to have a little bit of a nudge and a wink. But I think it's a real relief just writing stuff for kids without trying to be entertaining for an adult audience, without trying to be smart, without trying to layer your jokes for both, because it's actually quite tedious to have that double play. It's a real joy just to write something that's simply about entertaining one group of people. There's lots of stuff that adults can enjoy about Dougie. You know, there are jokes that everybody can get on board with because they're simple, pure, funny character jokes, and that adults will understand on a different level. Or there's visuals, or there's music references, or stuff like that that I have less control over. But that is great because it's not taking away. It's not taking away anything from our main audience that we really have at the center of our minds all the time. This is for an audience of children who are probably under five. And if you start trying to bamboozle them in some way, they're going to walk away. And I would do the same. I think that's genuinely a joy, not to be snarky or cynical, or just to approach it with a wide-eyed, fresh enthusiasm. It's so not who I am in my real life. It's an absolute joy to do it at work, you know, to let all of that go.
I mean, I think there's a genuine integrity to that that does come through. I mean, there's the shows, as you say, it's very tedious, the shows that always have that little, the extra layers of meaning for the parents watching at home. And I think it was probably overdone, or it's just never been clever, but it just feels, as a parent watching TV with a child now, it feels very boring.
Yeah.
And then sometimes a real, it's almost overly simplistic, the earnestness sometimes, which can get a bit grating, but there does feel like a real integrity to, yeah, sometimes it feels dishonest, the level of simplicity to some shows. Now, I'm not going to call out any shows here which happen to like Hey Dougie a lot, but yeah, I think that there's, you can feel the integrity of the intentions behind it, I think, which is always a good
thing. Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a lot down to the guy at the helm, Grant. You know, he himself has got massive integrity. And I think he's over everything you know, over every visual choice, over every script choice, over every casting choice. He's over the whole thing. And I think that makes a huge difference. It's not farmed out. It's not produced by committee. It's produced by a small team of very dedicated, fairly single-minded people who just want to make the best thing. And, you know, there's not teams of animators working here and teams of editors working here. It's all produced in London at the studios in London. And I think you can feel that. The idea, I think, at the start was to have a kind of homemade feel. And obviously it's a way, way away from being homemade, but it does have that kind of, that heart to it, I think, which lots of stuff, you know, you know, if you're making 52 episodes a year or something, or, you know, 104 or 200, however many, how you keep that level of integrity without going into churn mode, I have no idea. It's not something I could do. You'd just be churning out. You wouldn't be checking. You wouldn't be caring. We're in a very lucky position that we can extend a lot of care to everything that goes on.
In a practical sense, then, if we go back, we've done the outline and the script, you've done two drafts of the script. I guess there's your sort of feeding back at the time about that as the script's being on through it. It might be two drafts, but I assume you're seeing it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm the last one to sign off before it goes to the BBC. So I'll get the draft in. I will make my notes on it, which I then send to Grant. He makes his notes on it and sends them back to me. Same as for the outline. I will collate those into something that's not rude and send it back to the writer. And then the same. Very often, by the time we get to second draft, we've either run out of time or we don't really need it for it to go back to the writer again, because very often then anything that needs changing is typing rather than creating. So I'm perfectly capable of making those changes. Or sometimes if a writer just isn't quite getting what we want, which, you know, does happen occasionally, it's not always easy to convey exactly what you want in a note, I will make the changes and then I'll be the last one to sign off on it before it goes to the BBC for clearance, before they can start animating it. But once it's gone from me, the next thing I see is the finished product.
And is there any cross or feedback from the animation process? Because one thing that strikes you watching Hey Dougie compared with a lot of shows is, I guess this is sort of in some parallel with the Magic Roundabout, there's a sort of psychedelic element visually. It's very creative, and it's not just a case of some characters appearing on the screen and moving around. Lots of things happen visually that are either part of the story or add to the experience of watching it. I'd imagine that there's a lot of questions or a lot of alternatives of how those images, how the animation's built up. Is that all handed over to the animation team? They get a script and they then work with Grant to work out how that works? Or are you speaking to the animation team as you're going through the outline and draft one, draft two, and thinking, oh, this could be good?
No, there will be times when Grant's saying that won't work in animation. You know, if there's something that we're suddenly asking them to do that doesn't, or sometimes you can just forget. You can say Dougie's put a thing around his shoulders, and you go, he doesn't have shoulders. You know, just there can be some silly little practical things, but other things that just are not going to work in animation. So Grant will kibosh those from the start because he's in the studio on the floor all the time. So it kind of, that can get kind of get dealt with by him. He's over that, but there will be, I mean, he's over it as in overseeing rather than I'm over it in a dramatic way. There will be times when there's very specific creative input from the writer about how something, you know, either a visual influence or it all goes psychedelic, but it might just be something like it all turns into a bit of a dream sequence, or there's an edge on the frame that suggests they're in a cloud, or it might just be a little visual clue. And other times not, you know, the animators for sure add an incredible layer of creativity to what they're given. And also, of course, we'll hand over a script, and that once that goes to animatic, there'll be bits of it chopped out. It will be, you know, it's a different thing.
I mean, you have like end of scene, Dougie walks out the door, next scene, Dougie's at the lake, and in between those scenes the animators might add in 10 seconds of something to link it together, but that wasn't in the script at all. It wasn't written down at any point.
We very often will add those little links, you know, kind of little transitions or interstitials. We often will add those into the script. But that's more for us as the writing team. That will be more of a beat to the script. Whereas if it's added not where we've put one in the script, it'll be much more of a kind of, okay, we need a little visual beat here. Whereas ours are always a story beat. So it's a kind of mix of two sources.
Mm-hmm. This sort of sound design seems very important as well. The music and things that you have. At what point do you work with musicians, or do you send the episode off once it's all together with the voice and animation? Or
I actually don't know that, because once it goes from my desk, I don't care anymore. No, I don't know. I actually couldn't answer that question. I don't know what point. I know that they work with the same crew of, you know, music sound design people from the start, who I think make an incredible contribution. And again, there will be things, little suggestions by the writer that might be, you know, oh, I suggest that we play something like the Cure track this here, or, you know, or whatever. So there might be little suggestions like that, but otherwise they bring an incredible extra layer to the show.
I mean, this is really, I mean, I'm learning a lot here, because I didn't know if you all sat around in a huge writing room at the start with loads of coffee around, and there's the animators over there and musicians over there. And
I mean, I think in the studio, because in the studio there are the animators and editors and directors, the writing bit is a bit of a lonely outpost. I could probably go and write in the studio if I wanted to, but actually that would mean getting on the tube every morning. So I'll stick here. And we haven't ever had I think we had a meeting before the show was even commissioned with a bunch of writers, just to talk about what it might be and if people were interested and that kind of thing. But since then, we have a Christmas lunch, and that's pretty much my face-to-face involvement with the writers. No, it's not this big kind of, hey, let's put on a show right here kind of thing.
What's next? So with the Magic Roundabouts, you have been working on the series Bible for that. Has it gone to the point of production where you're doing
that? I think that's still being, you know, they're just at the pitching stage, looking for allies and producers. So let's keep our fingers crossed for that. I'm hopeful there's going to be, I've just finished series four of Hey Dougie, but obviously production has not just finished. My bit of it has. So hopefully there's going to be more Hey Dougie. We should know about that quite soon. So next year, maybe again, heading straight into Feast. And hopefully I'll have another nonfiction book to write at the same time. So,
and that's the one that your agent is sending out at the moment. And is that something that you're having to do research for at the moment? Something you've been researching, or does that not start?
No. It's actually a really personal story. So I have got zero research to do, which is like, secretly, that's quite why I want to do this one. Although I'm hopeful that at the weekend, I suddenly thought, I'll tell you what I really want to write about, which is X, and I thought, oh, I'm going to develop a book proposal for that, which usually when I get something commissioned, that's when I really want to start working on something else. So I'm hoping that my desire to work on this other new thing will mean this other thing will get commissioned, because it's always the thing that isn't commissioned that you want to work on, I find.
I think that'd be a common feeling with other people we've spoken to on this podcast, particularly the bit where it's the knottiest bit of the process is when you're starting to really think about the next thing that you want to do, where it's the not the easier, but the more enjoyable bits.
Well, it's the bit when you kind of go, oh, I could do, oh, and I could do that. Oh, I, you know, when you're all about shaping something and creating something rather than, yeah, trying to cram things into a little alley that you've designated for yourself. I realize that the physical gestures I'm making at this point for me cramming something in are not particularly helpful on a podcast, but I am doing lots of physical gestures of cramming.
The fit with the metaphor. Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of listeners will resonate the concept.
Thank you to Jenny for joining us, and thank you for listening. We'll put a bit of information about Jenny and her work in the notes underneath this episode.
Do go out and catch up on the past series of Hey Dougie or the Magic Roundabout if it's out by the time you're listening to this. You can find out more about Unsound Methods at unsoundmethods.co.uk, or we're on Twitter at Unsound Methods. You can find me and my writing at lachlanbloom.com, or I'm also on Twitter at lachlanbloom.
And you can find out about me and my writing at jamiebatchin.com, which I will continue to update. I haven't really done much since moving my web hosting. Or at jamiebatchin on Twitter, or at jamie_batchin on Instagram. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.